Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
NBA All-Star Weekend officially in the books. Now we can get rolling with the final few games of the regular season. I remember when I was a kid, it seemed like the All-Star break was kind of the midway point. That's not the case now. I mean, we're less than 30 games to go in the regular season, and we're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, James Holis. He is our NBA analyst, and James, it's always a pleasure to get you on, especially as we hit this go time middle of February.
It's funny because we always say it's the midpoint of the season, but I think it's almost always been like this, where it's like two-thirds of the way through the season. But, it was actually a very, very, very interesting eye-opening weekend. So let's talk about it.
All right. So you say eye-opening weekend. First off, what stands out?
What stood out was we all talked about the intensity. I was agnostic. I didn't really care, right? I get it. Some players want to come and chill. It's been a hard season. We want them to go hard for 2 hours, and they're like, nah, I'm here just to get a couple dunks in, put a couple threes up, and I'm fine. I also understood the other side. So also, Victor Wembanyama understood the assignment. And it's funny. It takes one guy, you know, maybe two, because Cade Cunningham came out pretty hard too, to really up the intensity, and everyone followed suit, and all the games followed suit. Almost everyone. We'll get to that later, too. But so that was interesting to see, the real competitive nature of it. And as much as we, you know, kind of poo-pooed, I wasn't big on the idea of the world versus the U.S., but you saw it. And Anthony Edwards said it, like, you know, who was it more satisfying to beat? He said the world. They hear the chatter about the best players in the world and what's going on with American players and all. They hear the chatter. So I don't think it's xenophobic. I think it's just a little bit of national pride, right? A little bit like the Olympics, how no matter how you feel, what's going on in the world. But when it's time for the Olympics, every 4 years, we throw on the red, white, and blue, and we wave our flag. So it was really fun to see. Nice competitive nature to it.
You know what's funny to me about the All-Star game, and I think that it's justifiable for fans to kind of criticize the lack of effort in the game, but there's a lot of NBA games that actually count record-wise that have a lack of effort throughout the regular season. That's why it's always funny to me that the All-Star game gets heavily criticized. I criticize it all the time, but in the same sense, I criticize the effort that we're seeing from, you know, run-of-the-mill games on a Tuesday or Wednesday night.
Yeah, and it's a long season, and we all know that the season has its own ebbs and flows, and it waxes and wanes, the effort. But this is supposed to be the marquee event that brings in even non-fans. And, I thought it was a great game, but having it in the middle of the afternoon on the West Coast wasn't the best idea. And I get it. It's competing with the Winter Olympics. But, there's always going to be things to criticize and peek and tweak. But in this instance, I think they got it right.
Let's talk about some of the festivities. Well, you know what? Before we do that, your thoughts. Anthony Edwards wins the Kobe Bryant All-Star MVP award. Obviously, he deserved it, right? Whoever comes out and plays the hardest in a game like that typically is going to win that award.
I mean, kind of, but like we had, what, four games, really? One, two, three games, four games? Four games, right? And of course, like, you know, it's funny how it goes in stages. I guess like the regular MVP, though, in a game. Whoever, the lasting impression is the lasting impression. Anthony Edwards was great. He played a lot of minutes in all the games he played. I think he played, what, two of them? But, hey, Jalen Brown was great in his first game he played. I think Victor Wembanyama was insane in both games he played, or did he play one game? Either way, he was great. It's fine. You know, Anthony Edwards, it's funny because he made a quote of his before the game was like, it is what it is. I don't care about the intensity. But he absolutely cared about the intensity. He came to play. He definitely earned it. I know he didn't want to be labeled as the face of the NBA, but he's one of the faces. It is what it is. He had the charisma. He had the game. And he's going to carry the mantle.
Let's talk about Damian Lillard. We got to see Dame time once again. He wins a three-point contest. I had someone ask me if it bothered me that someone who has not played all year long won a three-point contest. I said absolutely not, because he's one of the best to ever compete in this competition. I think you and I agree here. It was cool to see.
It was cool to see. And again, this is all exhibition, man. Like, it's all entertainment. He's still in the NBA umbrella. He's on an NBA roster. He's one of the greatest shooters of all time, right? We know it's Steph Curry. And then there's a gap, and there's everyone else. Well, Dame is right at the top of everyone else. And not, you know, maybe even a notch above a lot of guys, because if it wasn't for Steph Curry, we'd probably consider Dame the greatest shooting point guard ever. So, yeah, man, and he won it, so you can't complain. Good to see that with him come off a major injury, and he's probably in the twilight of his career, kind of, right, at the latter end of it, you know. So that was good for him.
What was the best part for you of All-Star Weekend?
I think the fact that I actually tuned into the game, I was actually, like, you know, 90% of it was competitive. That was the best part because, well, we had three game winners, right? Three games come down to the last shot, basically. That's amazing. And sure, it's only one quarter each, so it's the equivalent of one whole NBA game. But that was really, really good. They did a really good job of the pacing. It was not really high level basketball, intense basketball. And yes, also I think when I said bittersweet, it was also cool to see that last one when the young boy just ran the old guys off the court. The old guys had nothing left. Once the adrenaline was gone. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and even Kawhi Leonard, they couldn't maintain that intensity. And we saw the next generation of the NBA who's, you know, they're gently wrestling the scepter away, but they're taking the scepter away from the legends that are still in the game. And Steph Curry can't even play because he's dealing with the injury right now, right? So, yeah, it's a passing of the torch a little bit. And, you know, I'm excited for the NBA to come in the next decade.
James, let's talk about some of the other pressing questions that Commissioner Adam Silver had to deal with. And you know, this goes beyond the stars and what this looks like as far as competition in the All-Star game. But Adam Silver kind of has a problem right now that David Stern really never had to deal with. And that was teams tanking. And it's so open today. It's not a new concept. You know, you can go back over the course of the history of the NBA and you can accuse teams of doing it. The San Antonio Spurs, the year they got Tim Duncan, I mean, that comes to mind, right? I mean, you can go back to the David Stern era, but I don't feel like this was ever a prominent talking point when Stern was running the league, the way Adam Silver has kind of been bombarded with this kind of issue now over the last couple of weeks.
So I'm going to say, well, I can't even argue with you because I know that, you know, hey, the ballyhoo tanking of the Spurs to get Tim Duncan. Like, it's happened over the years.
Yep.
But I think, you know, I think we'd all agree it's never been as blatant as you take, you know, you take a lead into the fourth quarter and you sit your best players like the Jazz did. It's just never been so blatant. And it's, you know, it is. It's not in the competitive spirit of the game. I don't know, though, it's almost like Pandora's box, right? It's been something that's been happening. Teams have done it strategically. If you didn't put your foot down when the Philadelphia 76ers had the multi-year process, it's hard to put your foot down right now. Because the process was egregiously more blatant and open tanking than anything we're seeing now. And that was deemed okay somehow. So that's where my problem comes, the hypocrisy a little bit. It was absolutely rampant for a few years. And Philly wasn't the only franchise to do it, but it was open, and Utah's been doing it now for years. And all of a sudden, it's a blinking red light problem. I don't see it as that. See, we're having a little bit of a quote-unquote moral panic talk about it because it is part of the game, and they're doing things under the rules. It's open. They know it's happening. So I don't get why all of a sudden it's become a hot-button issue.
Well, I think it's become a hot-button issue because you got to take a look at ticket prices for one, right? I mean, if you're a fan, specifically in the state of Utah, where we have the Utah Mammoth, we have the Utah Jazz, that is it. This is not Los Angeles. You don't have a ton of choices when it comes to professional sports. We have RSL as well for those who watch soccer. But when you're paying hundreds of dollars to go to a game and watch competitive basketball, and you see a team that's openly tanking, listen, this is the same criticism. You nailed it right on the head. It's the same criticism that was being faced with the Philadelphia 76ers during the whole process era. I just think that in today's world, it's becoming abundantly more clear based off of what we've seen the past 3 years, right, from a variety of different teams. And I think that's why the NBA had to clamp down and fine the Utah Jazz $500,000. We've seen this sort of behavior over the past 3 years.
For sure. Now, the other end of that, though, that $500,000 sounds like so much, but we know that's that owner, that front office can find that much in their couch cushions. You know what I mean? A $500,000 fine is not a huge deal. It's more performative, it seems like. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but we also know that having a superstar level or a high level rookie under team control for basically 8, 9 years, because you know those max deals and max extensions, that's a big deal, and that could be a franchise make or break type of thing. And sure, guys can leave; they can turn down the extensions, but they are not because it's franchise. It's like life; it's family altering money. But so I see both sides of it. If you're going to change the rules, then fine, change them, right? I get it. It's a different era, and it's so, I think now, especially the digital information age where any fan can look at anything and the highlight clips are going around, and, you know, there's a million podcasts and videos being made about the happening, is definitely more exposure to it, to the point where maybe he does have to do something. So, I can see why a franchise would say, hey, we're going to be in the toilet for 2 years so we can get a franchise savior possibly in the lottery. And I can also see why the NBA doesn't like the optics of it, right? And if you're buying tickets to a game, you know the Utah Jazz are coming. You're buying the Jazz game tickets, why are you putting big money on that? You know what I mean? Why are you spending big money on that? So maybe that's being a little bit negative about it. But, if I don't know what the answer is, but something has to change, because as long as there's a draft lottery, there's going to be teams that are going to try to be bad on purpose to get high draft picks.
What's a bigger issue in your mind, tanking or players sitting due to rest?
So that is the one, right? You pay big money to go see, I don't know, let's pick a team. Pick your team, Knicks. And you got to see, you know, Brunson's your kid's favorite player. He loves Brunson the way he plays. The Knicks come in town, and all of a sudden Brunson's sitting for rest. Not an injury. Pay the money for these tickets months in advance. You want to see Cat and you want to see Brunson, and all of a sudden, Cat rolls his ankle and they sit Brunson for the night. That's probably a bigger thing to me. And I know teams have been fine for that too, right? Not giving enough of a forewarning to the league that they're going to sit guys. Teams are getting, you know, dinged for that too. But that, I think, is a bigger issue when it comes to fan treatment than a team that's just saying, hey, you know, we're shutting down for these next 3 months, and my whole team knows it because we're 15 and 30, you know. So definitely the unauthorized out of the blue rest, I'm not a big fan of that.
Again, right now being joined by James Hollis, our NBA analyst, as we get to talk about the second part, we call it the second part of the season, not necessarily the second half. James, yeah, you said there's a lot of things catching your eye right now as we now move in to the next portion of the season. What is it that you're looking at and saying, this right here, guys, this is what we got to pay attention to?
Well, we know this is the stretch run. This is when the team, Golden State lost their second best player, Jimmy Butler, but they've actually played surprisingly well. What can they do now as far as playoff positioning? What happens next? Does Steph Curry come back and does Porzingis come back, right? That's a real big deal. If Porzingis can come back and Steph can come back, can they make a push? And what do they look like, right? We know this is a dynasty that's in its swan song years. What happens next? Obviously, the Celtics came out and they're surprising everyone. They're still such a feel-good story. But as a longtime Celtics fan, I've been watching. The cracks are starting to show. The stress of the usage and the wear and the added responsibility of the guys starting to show. And even though the record's still Sterling, the number two in the East, you see how thin the margin is. And now there's all the talk about Jason Tatum. How does that look when he comes back? The Knicks had a really, really extended bad run, right? They had a bad run of like 15 and 20 games, but now they've kind of turned it around. Are they a real contender? What is the Knicks? Are they the team that we saw that looked like a contender, or the team that looked like they were really separated and disconnected for almost a third of the season? So there's a lot of nice storylines, man. The Lakers, obviously Austin Reeves is just getting back, but now Luka's out. Can they get all three of their main guys on the court, and can they make a push in what might be LeBron's last year in Los Angeles? So there's a lot of side stories to watch in the NBA right now, and there's even more. I'm sure you can probably hit me with a couple right now.
Yeah, let me throw one at you. We'll start in the Eastern Conference. Is there a team that we are not talking a lot about that you can look at on paper and say, you know what, guys, this could be a squad that gives us a little hell come playoff time? And I guess in reference to the 1 year, I believe Atlanta was a 7 seed, if I remember right, and they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. Does a team stand out to you like that?
So Orlando has been a disappointment all year, but they do still have two high-level offensive guys. Jalen Suggs had been in and out of the lineup, and he's trying to kind of round into form. Orlando was really, really good last year, and they've been disappointing this year, but they all it takes is a good 10-game stretch in the playoffs, right? A good 15-game stretch. Charlotte, it's funny to say because they've been a perpetual joke, basically, but they've had a really nice 20-25-game run now with their starters together. LaMelo Ball has caught a lot of flack because, you know, as an unserious basketball player, but he's been a key piece of that starting five lineup and that lineup, I was listening to a podcast the other day, they have a higher offensive rating than the quote-unquote death lineup of the Warriors from 2017. And that's insane. We know it's a blip. Things come and go. But they actually have looked like a real team. So that's pretty cool. And then, of course, let's talk about the Cavaliers. I'm not a big James Harden guy. He's to put it bluntly, he's a perpetual loser. Great numbers, loser mentality. He's on his billionth team for a Hall of Famer, which is insane. But the Cleveland needed something. They were really starting to take on water, and they made a huge move to bring in him over Garland. And he's been good. He's been good for the bigs. Once they get Evan Mobley back, we might see can Harden change his narrative and be a winner, because he's been a loser his whole career.
If we go to the Western Conference and we look at some of the teams that maybe have played some better basketball down the stretch, I'm going to use the Clippers here for an instance. I know it was a weird trade deadline for the Clippers. They have not played bad basketball over this last little stretch. You mentioned Golden State as well. Phoenix, I mean, it was all addition by subtraction with the Phoenix Suns. Are these three teams that could cause a little havoc in the West?
So we said Phoenix, the Clippers, and Golden State.
Yep.
Let's be honest. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they might make things a little interesting. The Clippers especially, we don't know when Garland's coming back. At least I don't know. I'm pretty sure other people who are smarter than me know. But Kawhi has been incredible. Some say he's been playing like as the best player in the league this year. And who knows? Maybe because he knows something's coming down the pipeline. That whole the whole fiasco about the back pay stuff. So maybe this is his swan song. I really like the Suns. Feel good story. I think their ceiling is just not high enough. They're going to make you win. They're going to make you scrap out every pin. They're not going to give you anything, but I think for the best in the West, not really, right? The Thunder have been, they've had a down year compared to what their expectations were, as far as we went from can they win 75 to they had about a 500 stretch for a little bit. But they're still the Thunder. I think they're still far and away the best team in the West with the Nuggets right behind them, even as the Nuggets scuffle a little bit right now. So I think the Nuggets and the Thunder are basically the class of the West. Everyone else, they're going to make you earn your wins, so the win totals might not be super sky high. But I think when it comes to a playoff situation, no one's going to be surprised by an upset that the Clippers or the Warriors or the Suns pull off.
Tough question. As we go post All-Star break, right now you have to pick who's the representative out of the East and the representative out of the West as we get down to the final 30 or so games.
So this is where the Jason Tatum returning comes in, because I think Boston has the corporate knowledge. They have the effort level. They have the system in place. They just haven't had enough top-end talent. And if Tatum can come back and be 85% of what he was and kind of slot in and take those Jordan Walsh minutes and some Hugo Gonzalez minutes, and all of a sudden you're getting 17, 7, and 5 from Jason Tatum in 25 minutes a night, then Boston is going to be really hard to beat. But I got to say, the Knicks just, it's almost like, they're going to back in to that by default, because I think the Knicks have probably the most complete team in the East. I'm not a fan of theirs. The defense has been suspect, but when their ceiling is shown, like when they beat the Nets by like a billion, by 60 points almost, and the way they handled, I'm almost got Detroit. I like Detroit. Even though I think the Knicks might, this experience factor might have them, I'm going to say Detroit. I almost messed up. I'm going to go Detroit. I love the young boys. So, yes, Cade and Jalen Duren and those boys will be gritty enough to upset the Knicks and come out of the East.
He is James Holas, always kind enough to join us. James, great to get a brand new week off and rolling. You and I getting back to our scheduled time here on the show. Before I let you go, where can we find more of you?
I want you to hold me accountable, sir, and every week we need to do this as the season rises up, because I love talking basketball with you. On all social media sites, where Scottie Pippen was my favorite player, so I'll play on his name, Snotty Drippin'. where I talk life and basketball and retweet silly memes on all social media. So just come over and let's hang.
James, always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time. Thank you again.
Hey, bud, you are the man. Thanks for having me on.
Always great to get James here on the show, talk a little NBA basketball. No games tonight. In fact, we still get a couple of days off before we got to jump back into it. Thursday, the NBA is going to return here on KOAL. Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports when we return. We are live from the Sutherland Studios.